This is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We're going to go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers. Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
Le'Veon Bell wants to be paid as an offensive weapon, when if you're the Steelers, he's come across as a bit of a weapon himself in different ways.
And Adam Nathan.
It's tricky because Hugh Jackson said nothing for me to shove him in.
We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Go Hawks.
Welcome back to another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast, still the one, only, and official UK Seahawkers podcast. We are veering ever dangerously and ever so close to the beginning, the official beginning of the 2019 NFL year, which is just over a week away at time of recording. And myself, this week, Stuart Court, is joined as ever by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
Not so bad, thank you. Bit tired after a Dortmund extravaganza yesterday, day trip. That went extremely well, so we are good. But burning the midnight oil the day after a 23-hour day, not the wisest of ideas, you could say, but let's plod on, and any yawns will have to try and be edited out by yours truly.
There's not a lot has happened, really. There's a few headlines coming out of Seahawks land since the end of the Seahawks season, early part of January now. It's a couple of months now, but time flies when nothing happens. Is that how the saying goes? I think it is. Obviously, the main topic recently cropped up over the weekend with the franchise tag deadline approaching rapidly, and the team decided for the first time since Alindo Mare, the kicker, back in 2010. To use the franchise tag, and they used it on the defensive end, Frank Clark. I think I saw you tweet, maybe to Mike Dugar, when it happened, that it kind of seemed it was going to happen anyway, and there wasn't much surprise, even with the 9-year gap since the last time they used it, Adam.
Well, we discussed this about 12 months ago, this was going to happen.
Yeah, we did.
Like, Frank Clark's agent was coming out saying there's a contingency plan in place.
And, insurance policies, weren't there?
Yeah, insurance policy, how that works, I have no idea. But it kind of felt like the only way this was going to be resolved was by Frank Clark signing the franchise tag, unless someone else set the market for him to base his contract off. But given that you had Tank Lawrence and Jadeveon Clowney both signing the tag at the same time, it didn't really feel like there was any other way around this, because the players seem more happy now, maybe to have this kind of situation, whether it will become a trend, I don't know. But it does seem interesting that all three of those guys signed it on the same day, and not one of them seems to have had any movement on contract talks yet.
No, but I'm obviously not following Clowney and Lawrence, although Lawrence seems a complete Le'Veon Bell situation from 12 months ago, really. But just reading seeing how Frank Clark's reacted to the news in comparison to Le'Veon and to Marcus, and then also seeing how John Schneider and Pete Carroll spoke about Frank Clark over the weekend in Indianapolis at the Combine, this seems like it's just giving them more time before they actually extend him. Like, this doesn't, obviously, probably famous last words, just doesn't feel like a situation where we're going to be veering towards a deadline for him to play under the tag or sign a new deal at some point in July, I think it is. This kind of feels like maybe between the once free agency calms down the next couple of weeks and the draft at the back end of April, this kind of feels like this deal will be extended and Frank Clark will be sealed for the foreseeable and not be playing 2019 on the tag. Is that something you can see it happening, or do you think it will be something they revisit in 12 months' time?
I guess so, but I think it depends on who's going to blink first, because if all of these guys, let's be honest, live under the ego of wanting to be paid as the number one, that much is evident. And in the same way as, Bell saw Todd Gurley's deal last year and thought, well, I'm not getting mugged off and taking less than that, and that messed up any chance that was going to happen. You kind of feel that in this instance, those three guys are all looking at each other thinking, who's going to go first, and then I'll try and get a bit more than you. And I don't know, I just wonder if it might be one of those silly things that time ends up just running out because everyone kind of forgets to sign their own deal because they're so worried about looking at someone else's. I don't really know how it's going to resolve itself, to be honest. In theory, of course, you're right, that's how it should end up. But I don't know, there's just something about it that makes me think, I don't know, we might end up having a season of this.
Yeah, which does not bode, is a bit foreboding for what, who could end up on the franchise tag in a year's time with quarterback deals and maybe linebacker deals to be sorted out over the next 12 months as well, Adam.
Well, Wilson's going to be a dick about it, let's be honest. I mean, let's call a spade a spade.
Yes, I think he will be.
I don't necessarily blame him for it, but he is going to be an arse to deal with in this situation. And he's going to be flashing leg left, right and centre. I'm sure he wants to remain a Seahawk, but within that context, he's going to make sure that he does it very much under his terms. And guess good luck to him. I don't mean that because I want the best for the team, but you know, he's going to do what he wants to do, so that is what it is.
Yeah, but using the franchise tags, it does mean that Frank Clark, if he does end up playing on the tag in 2019, will cost $17 million towards the salary cap, which, let's be honest, is not a bad payday, even if it is not ideal for probably any party involved after what we've seen with what happened with Cam Chancellor after he signed his big contract, all the nonsense with Earl Thomas over the last 15, 16 months. It's still a pretty decent wedge to get for a 25-year-old, 26-year-old Frank Clark, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much money now. Like, it's, I mean, even if the worst came to the worst and he had a career-ending injury after this one, he'll still probably leave the NFL with like $25 million in career earnings on four seasons.
Yeah,
you know, it's, I kind of wonder if with the money just going up at the rate that it is, if the franchise tag is becoming maybe slightly more attractive just because it is a guarantee of such a lot of money, as opposed to, you know, even a few years ago when, you know, it may have been 11. I mean, 17 is a big number.
It is a fair old chunk, and there's no confusion over what he's been classed as there was a few years ago with Jimmy Graham, when that got a bit gnarly and nasty with the Saints before they ended up trading him. But yeah, tagging Frank Clark did mean that every other free agent for the Seahawks is as expected for the most part, because as we said, the one, if anyone's going to get the tag, it felt like it was going to be Frank Clark for a long, long time. So that meant that the Earl Thomases and KJ Wrights and Justin Colemans of the world will enter the free open market when the league season begins. Well, it'll the tampering period, which is just a load of baloney, really. The league season starts on the 13th of March at 9 o'clock UK time. Earl Thomas, KJ Wright, Justin Colemans are the top three names in that free agent list. Would you agree, really, Adam?
Yeah, I would certainly agree.
And they're probably the three unlikeliest to stay. Obviously, Earl Thomas, there's no chance in hell of him coming back, I think, even though he's maybe overplayed his hand with every safety in the league appearing to be released and disposable, given what's happened in the last couple of days with Landon Collins and Tyrann Mathieu of the world. But KJ and Justin Colemans appear set to be paid, and probably pay too much for the Seahawks liking. Do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, Coleman's one you probably like to stick around for the versatility, and you know that nickel corner's always been quite an important part of Carroll's defense. KJ Wright, I think we said with Rob Staten in the last show that someone was just going to pay him too much money to stick around. I guess there's the thought that he might, you know, love Ken Norton Jr. and love the area, so might take a few million less to stay. But I would consider that pretty unlikely for someone that's, you know, injury prone. You might want to think, take what you can get now. And the Earl Thomas thing has turned into the farce that we thought it would turn into last year. I mean, I was thinking earlier on today that I was saying, again, 12 months ago, that no one really has any leverage in this situation. Not Thomas, not the Seahawks, and not the team that's going to get him. And the Seahawks lose another top player for nothing. Earl Thomas is not going to get as much money as he thought he was going to get, partly because of injury and partly because there's going to be other safeties out there that a lot of teams will say, well, we can't get Thomas, so we'll take this guy instead. And the team that gets Thomas isn't going to get that much, hasn't got much leverage either, because they're going to have to pay him a little bit more than all the others for being slightly better. And they might just think, well, let's just go and get, you know, Joyner or Landon Collins or Tyrann Mathieu instead, who may not be quite as good, but will do a job for a bit less money. So the whole situation is just the mess that we thought it was going to be. And ultimately, you know, people get really snobby about it's either when you're talking about tradings, oh, it's not a first round pick, so it doesn't matter. Well, I'll tell you what, right now, if you give me another second round pick or even a third round pick for this draft, I would be ripping your arm off for it.
Yeah.
And we all got so up our own asses about, oh, well, Thomas is worth a first or a first and a second, and how dare they offer us a second round pick. You know, sometimes you've got to look forward to what could be coming and say, you know, a second round pick could be the 40th pick in the draft.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we've said a few times on there that Schneider and the guys who do all this, the cap stuff, kind of do forward plan, and the fact that they kind of were so stubborn in their ways and wanted to get what now appears to be a too high a price for Earl Thomas, because they're not going to get, if he leaves or when he signs somewhere else, they're not going to get a second round pick 2 years later than they wanted a second round pick. They're going to get a third or fourth, if any pick at all. They've kind of overplayed their hand at all corners of this with Earl Thomas especially, but I think the whole league has kind of seen this, not just the free agent class of safeties coming, but also this crop of safeties in the draft, which kind of saved the day on Monday. I think reading reports from the combine on Monday, it's a pretty interesting and kind of like for like, with club control being a buzzword for another team in Seattle this offseason. I think that'll be the case with the safety position for a lot of NFL teams. So I think it's just Earl Thomas has misplayed his hand, but as you say, with not just Earl Thomas, but pretty much every member of that vaunted Legion of Boom secondary, the Seahawks have misplayed their hands with them as well, haven't they?
Well, in fairness to Thomas, the team wouldn't get rid of him, so there wasn't, I guess, a lot more he could do.
But he's
now got two broken legs in 3 years, so who's going to give that guy $13 million a year?
And also, he's openly wants to play for one team who, it appears, with what they've done over the last week or so, won't have the money to stretch for Earl Thomas, which kind of makes deems all the last year or so kind of null and void, really, doesn't it? Because it does appear that Earl Thomas, if he's playing the red, either in California or Missouri, probably.
Yeah, I mean, it's just turned into a real stupid situation. And to be honest, I've got a lot of time for the way that the Steelers are dealing with Antonio Brown more on the Sherman's thing, which I'm still bitter about, in the sense that we just let the guy walk for absolutely no reason.
Yep.
Like, you could have got a third round pick for Richard Sherman and sent him somewhere that doesn't affect you. And the Steelers are saying, well, yeah, you know, obviously Antonio Brown probably worth a first round pick, so it's slightly different, but they said, no way are we just going to let the guy go wherever he wants. We're going to do a deal that suits us. And all of these guys we've let go, and we've got bugger all to show for it. And that's the real shame, because it's hard to move on from a team without getting anything back in return from it and expect to be at the same level.
It's pretty impressive in like a weird way that they've managed to do that, because they've lived the compo picks. The Seahawks and I think the Ravens, the teams who had the most, and obviously the Patriots, because the Patriots are always at the top of these lists, who have had the most compensatory picks since Schneider and Pete Carroll took over the team back in 2010. And they've kind of splurged it all and not got anything back, as you say. It's very, very strange. Also on Seahawks free agency, probably the next tier down from those three, J.R. Sweezy and DJ Fluka are going to hit in the open market. They're probably going to cash in, as Sweetie did a few years ago after his first time around Seattle. This is probably going to be one of them or neither of them that appears to be the likeliest. Both of them staying doesn't appear to be a high priority or a percentage or likelihood of it happening, Adam.
I mean, they're the example of, you know, two guys that fans will say, well, you've got to pay those guys. But then when they go somewhere else, the same fans will scoff at the money that they're making somewhere else.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, well, you can only have it one of those two ways, really.
Yep. Yeah.
So I wouldn't stun me, and I wouldn't begrudge them if they did want to go elsewhere. But from a sporting perspective, it would make a lot of sense for both to stay here and try and build on what they were doing so well, even if they both signed, you know, one-year deals again. But who knows? I mean, Fluka may be more likely to stick around because they've both got, you know, not really great injury history, have they?
No, and they both had their ailments last year. And also, as we said, I think last time when we wrapped up the Seahawks season, last time we podded, the pass protection for the Seahawks was not very good this year. And they, as improved as the unit was, there were still some frailties. And that pass protection frailty, if you're going to pay Russell Wilson what he's probably going to get upwards of $34, $35 million annual, you need to improve that pass protection to protect your investment. And Sweezy and Fluka, for as much of an improvement as they were at either guard spot, do you kind of risk it and try and find a retread on the Sweezy Fluka deal you did 12 months ago? Do you try and go down that similar route again, and maybe go through the draft also, because there is still room for improvement, and is are you going to get that improvement even if you keep one of them about, Adam?
I mean, let's be honest. If you can make J.R. Sweezy look pretty good last year, you can't tell me there isn't someone
exactly
like else out there that
exactly
you could do, but a similar also, kind of job with.
But also, Sweezy arguably was more consistent last year for the Seahawks than he was at any point during his first run, and he got $50 million from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers when he was below to average in the NFL. And obviously he was, as I say, more consistent this year, so you'd expect that him or Fluka, if the teams out there, are going to get similar from one of the cap-rich teams. I mean, you kind of saw what compounds the Mark Glowinski deal that Indianapolis got, because he was here, then Tom Cable found ways to do absolutely nothing with him, and he's gone to Indianapolis, and now he's getting paid the big money instead of being a success story at the back end of the draft for the Seahawks, which didn't happen under Mr. Cable, which is another example of that travesty that he lasted so long.
I can't really add too much. That was pretty perfectly summed up.
Yeah, outside of those for the Seahawks free agency, Mike Davis is going to hit the market. I don't think he's going to be a Seahawk. I think the running back spot that he's going to take with Rashad Penny, you'd expect to get a higher potential of carries next year and more responsibility. Mike Davis probably isn't going to stick around, do you think?
And no, obviously, I doubt it.
J.D. McKissic is obviously someone you probably keep around on the cheap. He'd probably do a similar job if required to. Akeem King appears to be an interesting name, but he is a restricted free agent, so the Seahawks can put a tab on him and then be able to keep him. Outside of that, David Moore, Jordan Simmons, who could be in line to take over either guard spot if Sweezy and Fluka do leave, are exclusive right free agents, so the Seahawks can basically do what they want and keep them. Same with Trevon Boykin, that's also still on the list, which is quite weird. I think he's in jail currently. Talking of free agency and free agents for the Seahawks, Malik McDowell was officially released by the team over the weekend. Second-round pick who obviously never saw the field for the Seahawks after an ATV incident certainly affected his well-being to the point where the Seahawks don't seem to think he has a chance of playing a down in the NFL. There was a few interesting articles, I think. Was it Greg Ball, I think, picked up on it. It was a wasted pick and the worst pick in team history, which kind of, it's just a sad situation all around, because it's a kid who's 23 years old and he's the one thing he's kind of worked his whole life towards. He's never going to get a chance to get the fruit of his labour, unpaid labour, is he, Adam?
It's one of those that, you know, it's tragic, it's not the right word because no one's lost their life, but it's disappointing, it's moving, and the natural reaction of a fan would be to lambast the player and, you know, F this and F that. But ultimately, in the clear light of day, the situation affects Malik McDowell a zillion times more than it affects any fan. And I guess, you know, to be anything but sympathetic to him is just a bit of a dick move, to be honest.
Yeah, I think I'd agree. And you obviously hope that he is whatever, able to live as normal and full life as possible, because some of as short of details as there are, it doesn't sound like he's had an easy run of it since the incident a couple of summers ago.
We've just gone through the players that we were talking about there. Michael Kendricks could be in jail and not starting. You know, there's a lot of gaps in the roster now last year that they did an amazing job of, putting a team together that was competitive. And maybe I'm being overly, cautious because that's the way I am. But it kind of feels like that the negativity that I had last year that was seemingly misplaced, maybe it's actually this year that it's going to manifest itself.
Yeah, and also there is one thing I was going to get on to now also. Like, the Seahawks as a free agent destination isn't what it was a few years ago, because the name value isn't there what it was a couple of years ago. Actually, 2013 is obviously a touted free agent class of Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril came, but there isn't that. There doesn't appear to be that appeal with the Seahawks, obviously, compared to the Colts, the Browns, the amount of money the 49ers seem to have every year. And just, do you agree with that? They don't seem to be as high up the list of potential landing destinations for the banner free agents in this crap, do they?
I do agree. And also, I think the Seahawks have always been fairly shrewd payers. You know, they're not the kind of team that ever really pay above, how many players have the Seahawks signed in the last few years? You can think, Jesus Christ, they've given him way too much money. Apart from Luke Jokel, which was a real desperation move, then they're not even overly attractive because they're known to overpay. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. They have to bring in a lot of players with zero draft picks, and they're going to have to hit on a lot of undrafted free agents again.
Yeah, there is no chance. I mean, I can't think of a player who would drop to 21 at this point who the Seahawks would go, yeah, four picks will be fine. They're not picking at 21. It's going to take some gymnastics from, because I don't really see anyone, unless one of the quarterbacks drops or someone like Ed Oliver drops or someone really falls for one of the Clemson guys, because it doesn't seem to be anyone. There isn't that kind of, like last year, it was a couple of years ago, when Teddy Bridgewater was the 32nd pick, we got out of that one as well. It doesn't seem to be that player. But obviously, a lot can change in the next 7 weeks. There is obviously a lot of big names on the free agent market. A lot of money is about to be splashed out, and obviously, it's probably going to wait, you'd expect, for the first couple of days to die down and then take their pick from what is left. Is there anyone you would like the Seahawks to take a run at in free agency, Adam?
Oh my goodness. It's a good question. I haven't got my list in front of me of players. I'd like another receiver if possible. I don't know how feasible that's going to be, because I just worry about the depth that we've got in that position. Linebacker concerns me. Defensive end concerns me a bit. I don't think there's that many positions now that you'd think, that I would sniff at, really. If there was a player they could get in a certain position that they were happy with the deal, I'd probably be okay with it. Who are you looking at from a perspective?
I really want him to go and get Matt Bryan. I don't think he's retired. He's obviously released by the Falcons at the back end of the season. He's the most reliable kicker out there. I think Gostkowski is probably going to stay in New England for a couple more years. I think he's going to be there for the Terry until he's got like a job for life. They're kind of like David Pleat at your boys and Steve Gridovich at Carl Vadom. I think he's got a job there for life. So the next one after Gostkowski is now, with the weird moves that the Falcons have made, one of a few weird moves they've made in early part of your season. I think just sorting that out for the next 2 or 3 years, because they don't seem to like the rookie kicker. Sam Ficken is the only kicker on the roster currently, and he was not exactly solid in the few opportunities he's had in the NFL at the for the Rams last year when Zerline was dinged up. But yeah, just go and get one of the more reliable kickers in the league who's somehow ended up on the market and also has a couple of examples of breaking our hearts over the last half a decade or so for the Falcons. I think he's the one guy I would want the Seahawks to go and get outside of that. Yeah, receiver, but I think after what happened in Indianapolis, I think they're going to be able to find a nice little one in the fourth or fifth round. A lot of them ran really quickly over the weekend, as Rob Staton detailed in his post on the Seahawks draft blog earlier today. Outside of that, there's no one really jumping out as I go through. I mean, Matt Brighton.
There's even someone like Ziggy Ansah, but is that really worth? Is it or Quan Alexander? You know, they'd be good fits, but only if they stay healthy. And can you really rely on that?
Exactly. The Texans have released Kevin Johnson yesterday, who's a really, I thought, quite good for the Texans when we played them a couple of years ago in that ridiculous game. But it appears that he's going to not take long to find a new place, and he could easily be a cheaper way of getting that slot corner spot sorted in lieu of Justin Coleman, because he's been released, he won't count towards any compensatory selection calculations this time next year either. So he would be someone I would quite like, but it doesn't appear that we have any interest in him. I've seen people mention Tyrell Williams, the LA Chargers wide receiver, but he's going to want to get paid his first opportunity to after two or three really good years as Keenan Allen's number two in LA and San Diego. See, I don't really see anyone jump off the page apart from Matt Bryant and the kicker position, because you have to go and sort it. And people like Donovan Smith getting paid by the Buccaneers a couple of days ago as well kind of sets the tackle market, and you wouldn't expect them to do anything there. Tight end, they seem pretty set, maybe. And quarterback, probably you'd hope with what they give up to get Hundley that Hundley's going to stick around, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just even scrolling down the list. I mean, it's just...
There's no one.
It becomes like almost like an NFL version of Football Manager, like, you know, Cordero Patterson, Randall Cobb, Devin Funchess. I mean, they're nice names, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, really? I'm not sure.
I mean, when we posted a few weeks ago, when we were going to do a poll a couple of weeks ago before live took over, Mark Woodcock said that he would like the team to look at... It wasn't Matt McCook. Someone said he liked the team to look at Anthony Barr, but it appears that he's going to be paid handsomely, which is seeing how Sean McVay and someone else, Sean Payton, went after them in their games last couple of years. That seems to be quite strange, because he kind of was exposed in that Vikings defense last couple of years somewhat, but he appears to be getting paid. Mark Woodcock said he would like us to have a look at Honey Badger, but that safety market is going to be somewhat diluted with all the names there, and Honey Badger falls under the classification of being someone who's going to be too rich for the bird, isn't he?
Yeah, maybe just go and get like Brent Grimes and bring his crazy misses over to Slate B. Carroll on Twitter. That'd be good fun.
Yeah, I'm sure Seahawks Twitter will enjoy that. What you're going to see is you're going to see the J.R. Sweezy, DJ Fluka moves again. You're going to see someone like Shabazz Stefan come in, but I don't know who that's going to be. Clinton McDonald is still an NFL player. He could be someone who could come in and push and help along Jaron Reed in what is going to be a big year for him. Deion Buchanan could be a linebacker, safety hybrid name to watch from Arizona. Obviously, he went to Washington State as well. So, yeah, but I think If they come out with someone like Matt Bryant or a kicker, you can look on his record and go, yep, that's improved the position, because I think Jankowski's finished, and so it would be encouraging. Billy Turner, that's a name for my draft crush pass. He's on the free agent slot. It's not a lot, and I wouldn't expect the Seahawks to do a lot in once free agency opens over the weekend, and obviously the season kicks off officially on the 13th. Of March. We're 7 weeks away from the NFL draft. We said the 21st pick will not be a pick the Seahawks make. They definitely need to trade back at least once and try and get, if not a second, a couple of thirds, and maybe fifth or sixth, try and get up to 7-8 picks, don't they, Adam?
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to do it, because it's almost going to be like they almost have no leverage in the sense that everyone knows what they need to do. You know, when you've got four picks, your first round pick, I would imagine, becomes a little bit less valuable because teams know you have to trade back regardless.
Yeah.
So I wonder what they'll get for that. Maybe a, I don't know, a second, a I don't know, a second and a third, or a second and a fifth. I don't know. They'll probably try and turn that into a third and a fourth. God knows. The draft is a complete mess. and how they're going to get out of it, I don't know. But yeah, as you say, it's going to take some severe gymnastics from Schneider and the boys to get any semblance of a draft class back, really.
Yeah, I think some people suggest that there might be a chance we see kind of like a Michael Bennett kind of, maybe not a middle as high profile, but a player trade to try and get that pick back. But you can't, apart from Ethan Posich, there's no one where there's depth of his position and also he's going to get much trade value, is there?
No, I mean...
If you get a fifth-round pick for someone like Michael Bennett after the two or three years he had in the run-up to that trade, you're not going to get much for Ethan Posich, who looks
rubbish.
pretty bad, yeah.
I mean, so, what could you get for Doug Baldwin now? Not that I would advocate that.
No, yeah, that'd be... God.
Six?
Nah, you'd be able to get more than that for him just because of how his contract kind of lines up and is kind of on the wane. You'd probably get a fourth. I think if you wouldn't have Marcus Johnson, you'd get in that Bennett trade, we'd have got a third. No idea why we put Marcus Johnson in. I think he's in Indianapolis now, so Doug Baldwin could be a name to keep an eye on, though, because it does appear that he's had, multiple surgeries, what Pete Carroll said he's had over in the early part of this offseason, which is always encouraging.
As we said would happen.
Yeah, but it's always encouraging when it actually happened and happened so quickly. But obviously, you'd hope they'd be ready and firing, ready to go when camp kicks off. Elsewhere for the Seahawks over weekend, Pete Carroll and Josh Sella both talked about the ownership issue. Obviously, Paul Allen died the day after the London game in mid-October, and his sister took over temporary control, which now appears to be permanent control, and the ownership has been transferred to the Paul Allen Foundation. It appears that the Allen family will keep its name above the door, as it were, and it seems like it's encouraging obviously other sporting things going on with ownership with myself. It sounded encouraging and pretty confident and pretty heavy assurances from both Carroll and Schneider that they're in it for the long haul with Paul Allen's sister Jodie at the forefront of it, Adam.
Yeah, good to hear. The owner is by far the most important person in the franchise. With bad ownership, you're just not going to win. And it's good to have some continuity there and no confusion. So I think we should all be absolutely delighted that this is the situation we've got at the moment, and the team's not going to be sold.
Yeah. Well, as I said, we did plan on doing a podcast a couple of weeks ago. Like, we did ask for some 2019 things. So I was going to quickly run through some of them. We asked for non-Seahawk moment or game. What was your non-London favourite Seahawk moment game of the year? Mark Woodcott said his favourite Seahawk moment of the year was the George Fant catch, run and stumble on Monday Night Football against the Vikings. His favourite non-Seahawk moment was the Rams losing in the Super Bowl.
Correct.
What was your favourite Seahawk moment outside of London, Adam, this year?
My favourite Seahawk outside of London... I think the most I jumped up and celebrated was David Moore's catch on 4th and 1 in Carolina.
I think I would agree. I was, if no one listens, I was at work watching that and I kind of like fist bumped in front of a customer in the store and it come down because before that game there was nothing like the weight on the game as there was that game, was there? Although we kind of broke the Panthers that week, but there was nothing on that. It was the first within your in kind of game, cup final game, wasn't it, of the season? Mm-hmm. It was kind of the biggest moment. Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Rams getting pumped in the Super Bowl, obviously the best moment of the year for Seahawk or non-Seahawk, to be honest.
yeah. Yeah, it was a terrible Super Bowl.
It was
awful.
Absolutely awful. The only good thing about that Super Bowl is that I watched the first half inside the new White Hart Lane, which was amazing, and then I came home and watched the second half. But just seeing Goff look so lost is just such a glorious, glorious, glorious thing.
Yeah, massive thanks to everyone who turned up in O'Neill's in Birmingham. It was a pretty good night, and by the end of it, I was chanting obscenities around the uselessness of Mr. Jared Goff to my mate who was there, who was a Rams fan, which I was the only one singing it, but that's what happens when you start drinking at 10:30 in the morning.
Indeed.
With a Bloody Mary in Coventry.
I have seen, actually, I mean, you had a good moment when Janikowski hit the field goal in Arizona. It was a crap game, but at least you were there.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a weird game. But that was also probably as annoyed as I've been at what I was last year, because I was there, because I went all that way, and they just...
were rubbish.
Pretty bang average. I mean, outside of that, I think it probably was that Panthers game. Favourite non-Seahawk moment, just watching Baker Mayfield at that kind of... I don't know, it's not a moment, but it's a series of moments. I just kind of think it's been dubbed that it was going to happen for a few years. Obviously, we saw it a few years ago with Johnny Manziel in that place, but now he's been bombed out of another league up in Canada. But the whole Baker Mayfield experience, I mean, a couple of years ago, I kind of was on him. But then you watch him and he's how he dealt with everything in the draft season last year, and how he dealt with Hugh Jackson pre and post firing. There are a few more fun teams to support in the NFL headed into 2019 season than the Cleveland Browns, and he's a massive, massive part of that, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, another massive part of it is annoyingly going to be Kareem Hunt, and I hated move. And as we're doing a kind of postseason, preseason roundup, that move really did piss me off. I mean, it feels unnecessary. It feels overly divisive, kind of just for the sake of it. And, you know, a team that have done so much right on a PR standpoint in the last 12 months to do that. I did let out a bit of a sigh, but yeah, I mean, the Browns can be great to watch next year.
Yeah, it was Charlie Wilson who said that the team should go for Anthony Barney. Also, his favourite Seahawks game of the year was that Panthers win in Charlotte, and obviously the moment being the David Moore fourth down touchdown catch, which was pretty much the last thing David Moore did, wasn't it, last year? It kind of hampered his Hall of Fame status, Adam, as well.
Yeah, but, you know, to get to the top of the mountain, you got to take the first step on the hill, so, you know, who knows?
Yeah, he's going to be someone who's going to have to make a bit of a jump in 2019, isn't he? Also, we've got a lot of time to talk about this, but he needs to be the Carolina game, David Moore, and not the December David Moore, doesn't he?
Yeah, we've got what? We've got Lockett, Moore,
Baldwin
and Brown. Sorry.
Yeah,
who
might be a cap casualty if the team do want to make a splash, which a lot of people on Twitter have suggested may happen, because he caught like four touchdowns, but he didn't do a lot else, and didn't really contribute massively to the team last year, did he?
No, not. I mean, as I say, he made catches that mattered, but kind of nothing else around it.
Yeah, so obviously the draft is 7 weeks away. We'll try and do a couple of podcasts before and around that weekend. This year it's in Nashville, Tennessee, because why not? 2019 season kicks off next week, as I keep saying. First edition of Get in the Bin, shall we, Adam?
Why not?
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly's an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and Mike, and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
kick off the 2019 season a week early and throw some people in the proverbial bin, Adam?
Why don't you go first? I always start. I'll give you the first dibs.
I'm going to go with... I tweeted, whoa, when this came out, and then I kind of read it and read the source of it. Charlie Casserly, how is that man still employed? Bill Belichick, I think Colin Murray actually liked the tweet from Bill about Bill Belichick's quote saying he's got, what was it? He's got the strike rate of a weatherman, I think Bill Belichick once said. the accuracy of a weatherman. He said that he spoke to a couple of teams and kind of they were not impressed or less than impressed from what Kyler Murray, the probable first round quarterback, how he presented himself to teams in the NFL. There's a lot of sources in the NFL you kind of look at and go, yeah, okay, that's probably what happened. That's probably on point. Charlie Casserly is very, very, very low down that. He's just one of those. Oh, he's still employed. He's kind of like, he's like the Adrian Durham of NFL network coverage, I think. Like, he's still employed. You kind of get, like, none of his bosses have realized he's still employed until he says something stupid, which is a way more impressive strike rate, Adam.
That is, a good one. You say probable first round quarterback. Happen to think he's definitely the first pick of the draft. What do you reckon?
It does sound that way. No, it's what I was going to say when you brought up the Arizona game. I don't understand what they're doing there. Josh Rosen didn't look that bad, particularly in the two games that we saw him, obviously the up closest against us last year. He can chuck a ball, and he had absolutely no help. He had no O-line to talk of. They didn't want to use their running back. He had Larry Fitzgerald out wide. He had Chad Williams for a couple of weeks before he got injured. He had Christian Kirk a couple of weeks in that midpoint of the season when Byron Leftwich was the OC and he kind of got injured. He had absolutely no one to throw to. And then you see the moves they've made. They've added Charles Clay already, who was cut by the Bills pretty readily at the back end of the season. He's already found a landing spot in Arizona. So is Robert Alford on the defensive side, who was cut by the Falcons, which was a bit weird. I kind of get where the new coach, Cliff Kingsbury, is going to want his quarterback in. He's only really got one shot at it, really, unless you're, I don't know, unless you're John Elway, you get 17 shots at your franchise quarterback before you get sacked. So I kind of get why he wants to bring in his guy, and Kyler Murray, I guess, is his guy. Wouldn't we just throw away a comment he made last year? But Josh Rosen is... It wouldn't take a lot for me to put him as the second or third best quarterback in the NFC West if he continues how he showed flashes of last year with next to nothing to work for. So I kind of do feel sorry for him. But at the same time, Kyler Murray is ludicrous fun to watch.
Yeah, I kind of feel if you're going to hire a head coach, you have to do it one of two ways. You hire the head coach and say, you can be the head coach, but you have to keep the quarterback around. Are you okay with that, yes or no? Or you say to him, we're hiring you, and if you want to get rid of the quarterback, then you can do, and we'll support you. So they're obviously going with the latter. At least for them, there's not going to be any indecision. It's going to be, and there's no excuses for the coach. You know, he's going to bring in his own man. No. And you can probably get, you know, 70 cents on the dollar from someone like a Washington Redskins, who are going to need a quarterback pretty urgently.
They're not going to get a first round pick for Josh Rosen, which is,
do you not think?
A little bit. No, I don't think they will. I think we bundle up second round picks, maybe. I mean, look what Khalil Mack got. And
he's got four years of cap control on this quarterback.
Yeah, which is why I think most quarterback needy teams in a pretty quarterback light draft class are going to look at Josh Rosen pretty seriously, because he's probably top five if he was entering the league this year anyway. And he was, what, the third quarterback taken last year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Was he before Josh Allen? Was he after Josh Allen?
I think Josh Allen. Yeah. I think he was 10, Allen was 12.
Yeah. So yeah, so he would be in that same spot this year because he's UCLA Josh Rosen is probably better than 1 year at Dwayne Haskins at Ohio State. He's definitely better than Drew Locke and Daniel Jones and whoever else there is at the quarterback position because it is pretty threadbare. So I kind of feel very bad for Josh Rosen. I kind of get what Cliff Kingsbury is going, but I also don't think it kind of feels like as soon as you drive a car off the forecourt kind of thing, you out of the kind of thing. I think that's what they've kind of done. This with the absolute sham of a roster Steve Keim has built or not built in Arizona, Adam.
It's definitely a farce and it's a silly situation and it's one of those that it can't be helping anyone.
But at the same time, if they do take Kyler Murray is not going to destroy Jermaine Ifedi as much as Nick Bosa or Quinnen Williams would. So there is that, I guess.
That is also very true.
Yeah, because I don't want Nick Bosa in the NFC West, although I realise that the 49ers probably would run to the pedestal to select him if it is Kyler Murray. But Kyler Murray is just, he's my favourite quarterback. He's not my favourite player in the draft, but he's my favourite quarterback in the draft. He is just, he should not be able to throw it as far and how he does, given his small stature, which was kind of kibosh last week when he weighed in and measured in Indy. Anyone for you getting the bin?
Yeah, you feel bad to do this because he is your own quarterback, but Russell and Sierra, what they were playing at in Brazil, I mean, that is bin basura worthy behavior if ever I've heard. I mean, singing happy birthday to a city in front of Christ the Redeemer.
Yeah.
Just it's a no from me.
Was a thing that happened.
Amazingly so. They're so weird, Stu.
If that tweet was a Kardashian/Jenner, it kind of, you'd expect it, but this is like I guess you must have to be that way to be a sportsman, I guess. I mean, you got Tom Brady last year kissing his son full on the lips. And then you've got a quarterback singing to a statue on top of a very large hill that he's probably been, what, he was in the country 10 hours at that point?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, did you see his carnival outfit?
Yeah, I did. He's an Instagram story I often skip at this point. He's the anti Mike Dugar when he's on the road. it was strange, but what are they trying to achieve?
I don't know. I mean, obviously it's all for brand. I mean,
that's what I mean.
I had to say it was a bit disappointing seeing the amount of fan interaction that went on in Rio, given the fact that Wilson made the trip to the UK last year and we heard nothing about it whatsoever. That was a bit of a shame. So that got me, that got on my radar as soon as I saw that this whole trip. Yeah. And then, started to sing to the statue. That just, tipped me over the edge, to be honest.
I mean, yeah. Like could they read, like, sung the ITV music from the World Cup from a few years ago? That would have made more sense.
That would have been good.
Yeah, I don't know what that was. I think
Brazil.
I think I might have been thinking of the South Africa World Cup one, which was just amazing.
Oh, a couple of Waka Wakas would have been great.
Yeah, it was quite weird. But like I said, for someone who's so on brand, and like he's tweeted out today, dangerous, which is kind of, and the picture is quite meme worthy, which Ben Baldwin, amongst others, has ran with how he's been held back by some people. I just don't see what that is going to achieve for, as Pat McAfee says, for the brand. It just doesn't make any sense. And as you say, it was just very strange. And it's, what, the first week, second week of March, Adam? The season starts in September.
It's going to be a long, long, long time.
And add into that the fact that he wants to be paid $35 million a year, and that is not going to be easy going for the other side of the wall on that deal. It's going to be an exhausting off-season when RW3 is concerned.
Well, it's already started with the kind of Colin Cowherd, the rumors to the Giants. I mean, I don't blame Cowherd. I don't think Cowherd's lying. I think he's been told something by something, but it's you know, we know why this has come out. Like, it's boring. Just spare us the time, please.
Like I said to Dugard, the fact that it was Colin Cowherd was perfection. Like, nothing is fit as well. Or, like, the Ronaldo Brazil shirt didn't fit Russell Wilson as well as Colin Cowherd coming out with that. I mean, like, Sierra, whatever, 1-2-step person, prefers New York to Seattle. It's kind of like, well, she's in showbiz. Of course she prefers New York to Seattle. There's more showbizy things happening in New York, isn't there?
Allegedly so. I believe that's the case, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it's just bizarre. But as you say, it's just the first annoying tumble. And if anything from Colin Cowherd, remember, just ignore it and carry on, because most of it is just going to be contradicting by himself like 2 or 3 days later when he has to fill out another 2-hour long show.
But this is going to happen a lot. We are going to get a lot of leverage news in the next month or so, or whatever, or the next year. Yeah. And you kind of think, like, guys, just, we know what you're doing. Also, just ignore, just get on with it.
And also, we're going to get a lot of that over the next 7 weeks, with obviously come out today, early today, that the team visited with Kyler Murray. They're going to be weirdly spotted at every quarterback pro day you could think of. They're going to be in Missouri. They're going to be in Duke. They're going to be at North Dakota State. They're going to be at Buffalo. They're going to be everywhere. And all of that, for the most part, maybe not North Dakota State, is going to be just leveraging it. They're not actually going to draft one of the top 5 quarterbacks in the league. They're not going to draft.
They're
going to
trade up.
They're going to trade all 4 picks for Kyler Murray and get number one. Smart just move. So the Cardinals and 49ers and, yeah, they're not going to do that. So just take a step back, as easy as it is to say. Just take a step back and look at the source. If it's Cowherd or Bayless, and you know it's just nonsense, or Stephen A. Smith, although he probably thinks that Jim Zorn's still the quarterback for the Seahawks at this point. On the other side of on the other side of getting the bin, anyone you want to praise over the last few weeks?
Oh, that's a good question. Anyone I want to praise apart from Harry Kane?
the healing powers of Harry Kane, I think,
Super Bowl winner Harry Kane,
naturalized Qataris that got Sun Heung-min back quicker than you expected.
Yeah, that was tidy actually. And one to praise, well, you obviously got someone in your head that you're thinking of. So who have you got?
I did, but I cannot remember. Yeah, sure. I think, going back on the Super Bowl, I think Sean McVay deserves a bit of credit. I know people might not like that because he's a Rams fan, the Rams coach and all that. But you've seen how people, and including the guy on the winning side of this one, have dealt with Super Bowl losses. And for it to be his first one and how he dealt with it, he took every portion of blame for that. He was outcoached. I think Mike Tuppy, if no one's watched it, it's on, I think it's the NFL's YouTube. It's 40 minutes long. It is amazing how quickly he figured out that they were royally fucked in that game. He realized that they'd done what the Bears did to him a few weeks before, and he kind of just stands there and goes, okay. And obviously nothing could be done to get out of whatever rut they fell into that day, because the quarterback's Jared Goff. But how he dealt with it, he took everything on the chin and kind of put it all on himself, which is, it is still a pretty young team, a pretty brash team, and he kind of just took all of that away, all the, what could have been a bit of a gnarly locker room and fallout from that, with how the defense played compared to how the offense played. There was just absolutely none of that, and a lot of that was because of how he fronted up and dealt with it in the press conference straight after the game, and how he dealt with it during the game as well, because it is, I think it's like 7 minutes into the game he realized that they were pretty much screwed unless they could find a way out or find a different way to attack, and they didn't. But yeah, I think Sean McVay dealt with the Super Bowl loss pretty well, Adam.
He did. The only problem is that he's very, very good at owning defeats and saying, you know, that one's on me, that one's on me. And eventually, if you keep on losing and keep blaming yourself, you know, obviously he is the absolute hero of the league at the moment. But your time on the top of the mountain doesn't last forever. So I'd be wary about how many defeats I wanted to own in public, just in case, you know, you lose a couple more and a couple more and a couple more, and you end up losing your job off the back of it.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I really can't think who I was going to want to praise. Anyone for you, Adam?
I do think the Steelers are dealing with this Antonio Brown thing very well. I mean, he is being an absolute walloper, let's be honest about it.
He is bizarre. His one-to-one interviews, I mean, it's the strangest interviews I've seen until R. Kelly sat down with the CBS lady last night. It's bizarre. He kind of, I don't know, he doesn't seem to actually know what he's doing, if that makes sense. He kind of just seems to have backed himself into a corner and has no idea how to get out of it.
I think he's being advised beyond awfully.
I don't know. I'm not sure if he is. I just think he's kind of said one thing. Although I think he is right with one thing he said. The way that the Steelers GM reacted, and his quote about Roethlisberger being like a GM and it's everyone else, and then Ben, you can't. The GM cannot be saying that. like we talked with earlier about Seattle being unkind or not as lavish free agent destination. Who's going to want to sign for that team when you know that you're, and the others, no matter how much money they give you, it's not going to be, you kind of just see him, it kind of feels like it's going to keep happening with their would-be stars outside of the quarterback room, doesn't it? I mean, Juju is probably going to be next in line a couple of years if Roethlisberger is still around, but apart from that, yeah, I think they are dealing with it pretty well. I think it seems by the end of this week it's going to be all done and dusted with AB in Pitt, Adam.
By Friday is the rumour.
Yeah. Also, one other thing, while I'm talking to Adam, do want to give a bit of credit to everyone who has done the three burpee challenge.
Oh, I still need to do mine.
Which the Helsinki family launched over the weekend to raise awareness for mental health. If you saw my terrible effort in my very small room, which was quite tough on Sunday afternoon. We are urging any UK Seahawker, obviously I've nominated Adam, Michael Sean Dugar, who did his, and nominated Theo Lawson, and we met him in London, obviously Steve Cohen, and Chris Kidd, who my co-hosts the podcast with. People like Ryan Leaf did it earlier today, the former Washington State quarterback and the former number one pick, I think he was, back in the day for San Diego. So there's big, big high profile people are doing it, and if you are a UK Seahawker, you are listening to this podcast, and you want to get the wheel turning on your side, please do the three burpee challenge and make sure to tag both Helsinki's Hope and the number three burpee challenge on Twitter and Instagram, because it's obviously an amazing cause and amazing work from a pretty incredible family who have somewhat invited us over to a South Carolina game, which is, I've looked, an hour and a half outside of Charlotte, and the Seahawks play there this year, Adam.
In Terre Sante.
So, yeah, obviously that could be something that we need the schedule to be very kind with, which it wasn't last year for yours truly. But yeah, a massive well done to anyone who's got involved on that on Twitter. If you go on the Twitter, it's just a constant stream of people doing three burpees, all from all walks of life, all the way across America and into Canada as well. So yeah, another massive congratulations to the Helsinki family, which are just doing ridiculously cool things for a really good cause, which is Helsinki's Hope, and raising awareness for mental health in student athletes across America. Obviously, quickly onto chapter subjects. The national meet is coming up on May 18th. In Newcastle, in the centre of Newcastle. Ticket information is on the Facebook group. It's pay what you want, and all the money you put in on the door at the venue in Newcastle will go to the different chapter charities, Archie Swell, Helsinki's Hope, and the SSAFA. There are quite a few spots. I think it's about 60% full, 60-70% full already. So they are filling up fast. It should be a good night with a few pretty cool items up for auction and raffle, which again will raise money for the charities for the year. Anything else to cover, Adam?
I think I'm good, my friend. I think we've chopped it all up. We've We've set the world to rights, settled all hash, and we're ready to go.
Yeah, so enjoy whatever the craziness that is the NFL free agency. A couple of years ago, it was at a Coventry City game when the team traded for Jimmy Graham, and that's where I'll be next week as well, as they entertain Fleetwood in one of the final home games that the team may be playing. So enjoy whatever comes with the Seahawks. If they do make any big moves, obviously Frank Clark or Earl Thomas or anyone like that, or if they do make a Jimmy Graham-esque trade, which seems highly, highly unlikely given their draft or lack of draft capital, we will emergency pod at that point. If not, we'll probably try and pod again a couple before on up to leading up to the NFL draft. If you want to get involved, you can on all the Facebook page of Possession Podcast, UK Seattle Seahawks fans, on Instagram at UK Seahawkers, on Twitter at Seahawkers UK. And we do urge you to get involved and send your topics, get in the bins, or questions you may have for either of us on this fair podcast. Until next time, though, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks.